Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, December the 29th, 2021. And the first hour is going to be pre-recorded, but our call-in number for the second hour, when Michael and I will rejoin you, is 563-999-3581. And you have to press 1 to go into queue to talk to us, and we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Now, Dr. Tim's on vacation this week, and like I've said the last 2 days, instead of having a blank hour, we've decided to play 3 of our top recordings comparing Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step program with this work. And it's another tool, and it's how to face things that come up. And the stats that I quoted the last 2 days is the American Addiction Center and Drug Abuse. And they say that during the holiday time that there is such an increase in people having depression and grief and all these things and turning to alcohol by a 29% greater increase of use than normal. And so we're wanting to offer that there are solutions. You know, that is just a drug to keep from looking at the pain. And forgiveness is the tool that we teach, our main tool. And so the last 3 shows have been with, and she has a lot of knowledge. I mean, it's just amazing listening to her talk about the AA program and the 12 steps. And so at this time, I am going to play one that is a discussion of the 12 steps and this work. And this is a recording from 2015. Enjoy. Welcome.
Thank you, sweetie. And that's the plan, is to go back into the 12 steps. I'm not sure what happened to the clock yesterday. It was some kind of a time warp because I swore that probably I was speaking about the responsibility communication process for about 20 minutes, and all of a sudden the show is ringing in my ear. Oh, time's up. So we'll go back to that tomorrow, and we may end up alternating a few more days. Who knows with the 12-step work, which I think is going awesomely, getting reports from several people that are really benefiting, Gail, from the input that you've got, and Dave and Dr. Tim. Just lots of really powerful input and an overview and understanding of the parallels and the way to put the two sets of tools together to enlarge the toolkit. So, fabulous. Delighted to be here. Gail, how do you be, young lady?
I am well. Thank you.
Wonderful. Anything new and exciting in your life?
Nothing new and exciting to me. Well, okay, now that you mention it. last week when I was doing the 12 steps, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I had such a high level of vitality. And, of course, naturally by Thursday and Friday, I hit a healing crisis. that is one new
good for
thing.
You.
Yeah, good for me. Next layer, right?
Well, that's what it's all about. And, you know, it's interesting. There's a new film out there that Gene and I went to see. That's how we're taking our intermissions from the intensity of what we're doing here between getting set up in the house and getting editing done. But we went to see, and I invite everyone who doesn't know what a healing crisis looks like or a healing process looks like to go and see the film, The Letters. And it's a story of the life of Mother Teresa, who has this experience of this super high vitality and direct communication from love, from the Creator. People would call it God, whatever word you want to use. I don't think love cares what you call it. It's kind of like one of my favorite sayings is, call me anything but late for dinner. Acknowledge the presence of love in your life, and you're acknowledging the Creator. So here, Mother Teresa has this call, and, you know, she's a school teacher. She's a cloistered nun. And all of a sudden, she gets this direct communication, which means super high vitality, as you're talking about. And a significant part of the rest of the film, aside from, you know, giving you a pretty good window on her work and some of the stuff she went through, some of the challenges she had, they introduce her spiritual advisor, who has, and I've ordered them because they've now been published, a copy of all her letters to him. And what I realized, if you go back and you read the lives of many of the saints or the mystics, what you find is people who have this beatific experience, this full-blown white light experience to the extreme, and stay in it. And then their rest of their lives is torture. And they, you know, they talk quite a bit in this film about Mother Teresa, who is doing this awesome, wonderful work based in love. And is, I mean, it's really powerful space of love that she holds for things that would turn most people's stomachs. And yet in her letters to her spiritual advisor, she's describing this torture that she's going through. And of course, I've read about that sort of thing before with the mystics. And what clicked is, I got it. What happens is when you get to that really, truly full-blown light experience, which is just beyond comprehension. You know, if you took the most delightful, awesome, fun, exciting, you know, sweet, wonderful experience you've ever had as a human, and then you multiplied it by the largest number you can imagine. You know, when you were kids, you played the game of 100 quadrillion, million, billion, zillion, quadrillion, billion, you know. If you multiplied it by that, you wouldn't touch what that experience is. So here, Mother Teresa has that experience, transforms her life, and then she goes into process. And because she doesn't have the tool of forgiveness, her healing crisis just goes on and on and on and on. Without the awareness of what the symptoms of healing look like, people stay in it forever. The mystics, these tortured lives, and what they're being tortured by is the content of their own carbon-based memory, their own generational patterns. That there's the vitality to start to move it, but because they don't know how to crack it open, they get stuck in it. And a lot of people have, you know, rejected the mystical experience because I don't want to go into that kind of torture. And what's happening is they're stepping in with the opening and the opportunity to clean up a thousand generations of insanity that's gone before them. The hate, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the quote-unquote demons that have plagued their generations. And it just was like a big opening for me to watch this and realize, that's what the mystics are describing as being tortured. They're in a major healing crisis, and because they don't know what drives their perception that is tortured, they don't know how to collapse it and go in and clean it up. An interesting view, and I was going to share that on the show at some point today, but you certainly created the opening when you talked about, you know, along about day four, you go into a major healing process. And isn't it awesome that when we do step into that, and I can remember times when in the early days, and I didn't really understand what was going on, and a healing process would open and would go on for days. And now the same healing process or perhaps a more intense one will open and I can be done with it in 10 minutes because I know how to do it now. I have the tools. These people didn't have first century Aramaic forgiveness. And so these things just went on forever. So it is nice to have the tools, isn't it, Gail?
It is. It is for sure.
Yes.
And thank you for that piece as well. I mean, knowing now that, you know, even Mother Teresa dealt with this and suffered. Wow. So that helps.
Only
a lot.
Suffer. Yeah, there's no demon that can make us suffer. What the Greeks ended up calling demons or evil spirits is simply the mind energy of generational patterns. That's where the torture comes from. And knowing how to crack it and remove it, forgive it, is just, you know, monumental.
Agreed. Agreed. I'm grateful to be on the team, and I'm grateful to be able to offer another piece.
So am I. While we're on that topic, let's see if Dr. Tim has any thoughts about that. Tim?
Okay.
Which one?
Just the whole thought of what was happening with the mystics. I'm sure you've probably read some of those things where these people are living these tortured lives. Does that fit for you? Does that make sense for you?
Yes, absolutely. And as you were talking, it was even making more sense. You know, for years, in my studies and readings, I've heard about people who had these peak emotional experiences or enlightenment moments or gifts, whatever you want to call it, and then they end up living in a broken body. You know, car accidents that leave them in chronic pain, debilitating chronic diseases, you know, and they just keep going. Mayor Baba and Krishnamurti and all these people, many, many that I've read about, I forget the name of the book, but I read one recently where I talked about it a year or so ago on the show, and this monk who was just, he worked in the kitchen and became enlightened. And there he was in the last years of his life, racked in pain and physical pain, and they would go to comfort him, and he would say, no, I'm leave me here. I'm offering up my suffering.
Yeah, let me just suffer.
I'm doing it for God or whatever. So,
yeah.
And with the understanding that I've been building over the last 20 years or so, breaking out of the mold of thinking. I mean, I was raised in a Catholic tradition that had you, every time you were going through some kind of pain, we were told, offer it up for the poor souls in purgatory. Literally. Stay there, suffer. You know, you're kneeling on the floor because there aren't any padded kneelers left, so you're kneeling on the floor and your knees are hurting, and it's, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes into it, and there's pain shooting up your legs, and you're told just, you know, suffer it and offer it up for the poor souls in purgatory. So as I was listening to you talk about it, the little light bulbs are going on saying, you know what, I'll bet that's more the case, that this is a situation where people were, a lot of spiritual traditions say you can't storm the gates because my physical body in this moment doesn't have the vitality that could actually contain or survive experiencing the level of energy that it's ultimately capable of experiencing. It isn't vibrating at a high enough frequency. And when I get exposed to those higher level frequencies, if I'm not eating right, in good physical shape, in good mental and emotional shape, and armed with the tools to get rid of the energies that don't belong, all I'm going to experience is an intense activation of a lot of negative energies that don't belong in my system, which we call symptoms. And so that light bulb was going off for me that perhaps a lot of these people who have suffered and suffered in silence and been the great saints and martyrs because they tolerate so much with a smile or they suffer through it, perhaps there's another way. And I think it's great that they don't get negative about their symptoms. And at the same time, wouldn't it be wonderful if there was a way for them to actually process through the energy and be relieved of the symptoms?
Yeah, I think in that context of that story about offered up for the souls in purgatory, they'd probably be a whole lot happier and better off if we offered aliveness, joy, creativity than suffering, pain, and trauma. You know, it's just like the whole root of the idea of sympathy is suffer with somebody as opposed to being the space and holding the space of love. And I think that was Brother Lawrence that you were talking about that experienced his enlightenment while washing dishes. And yeah, if we can't process what needs to be processed, it's going to express in the battleground of the body. It's going to express symptomatically. So probably Gail has the answer as to exactly how long when somebody gets into the 12-step program, they have to do their work to be cured, to be finished with it. Was it a year, 2 years, Gail?
It took about 2 years to get through the steps the first time, but I continually work the rest of the steps every day. I work all the steps every day.
You mean in that first 2 years you weren't finished?
No, I was not finished after 2 years. I was not cured. I was not cured at all. Come on, you've seen my my personal coach evaluation scores when I first met you. No, I was
I'm
not finished.
I'm just being a wise guy. And there are people who have knocked me when they say, well, you've been doing this for 45 years and you're not finished yet? No, not finished yet. Well, there must be something wrong with this. No, it's called a process. And when you realize, and I forget exactly the number, but, you know, in 30 generations of your bloodline, if you sit down with a pen and paper, in 30 generations of your bloodline, there's over 1.7 billion people. 30 generations, 1.7 billion. You know, one yourself, one generation back to two generations, four, eight, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1,024. Doesn't take long to get up to a billion, and that's how many there are in 30 generations. And that's what we're talking about, inviting people in to clean up, because that genetic structure that they used to say was junk, the part of the genes that was junk, and originally they were saying over 90% of our genes are junk, the DNA is junk. It's not junk, it's the most exquisite database that ever existed. It carries every thought, every feeling, every reality from every generation. And if your so-called body, your multi-generational database, your body is going to be a fit instrument with which you incarnate the active presence of love, then you're going to have to clean out of it which is unlike love. And you start thinking about, you know, the ignorance that in this modern, enlightened day and age we live in, you know, we still live in a world where in the last 75 years we've killed over 275 million people in war. Not much enlightenment there. You know, what do you suppose life was like on most of the planet 5 generations ago, 10 generations ago? When Genghis Khan stocked the earth, what do you suppose it was like? What do you suppose it was like when the Han dynasty was murdering off the competing dynasties? You know, it's pretty amazing. When you think about that's born and bred in all of us, and to really, truly incarnate a human life, and for anybody who's new to the show, we have a simple definition for a human life, hold a newborn child. And you know exactly what a human life is. It is clearly this awesome active presence of love. And we are meant to inhabit this form our whole lives long as the active presence of love. And the only thing that will ever inhibit us from doing that is the generational content that never belonged in a human life in the first place. And to have the courage to face and clean up that database is quite a piece of work. And the form of that work that we're tying in with the first century Aramaic forgiveness work, we spent the whole week, if you weren't on the show last week, we spent all week on, from Monday to Friday, on the 12-step program, a program for cleaning up this multi-generational database and coming out the other side as intact human beings. And I understand Magda has her hand up. Magda, do you have a comment for us on the 12-step program?
Is Magda there? Oh, hi.
Hi there, young lady. Welcome.
Hi there. I called in because you had talked to me the other day about calling in on Tuesday. This is Tuesday, right? The responsibility communication.
Oh, actually, it was Monday that we did the responsibility communication, and we're carrying on with the.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, then I misunderstood. I thought you said Tuesday.
Okay. But anyway, we are going to pick it up again tomorrow. I ended up spending the whole hour yesterday.
You have Gail there right now, right?
Right. We're going to pick up the responsibility communication again tomorrow. We didn't get through it yesterday, but we had, announced last week that we'd do the responsibility communication yesterday and that we'd pick up the 12-step today. So if there's space tomorrow, it would be awesome to hear from you because we're going to be back on responsibility communication.
Great. I'll do that. I do have one little comment to add to what you've been saying about being a martyr and putting up with the pain and offering it up and all of that. I was also brought up as a Catholic, so I understand those concepts. And I really love, and I want to pass on what my friend Sunny, you met Sunny, what she says is, let me do everything, learn all my lessons, whatever I need to do, with joy and ease. And I'm going, that really is a great intention. So just wanted to pass that on. And then I'll call back tomorrow, okay?
Okay. Appreciate you. Blessings.
Okay. Hi, Gail.
Sorry.
Blessings, everybody. Bye-bye.
So, Gail, I'm going to turn it back over to you, young lady. Go for it. What do you have in mind?
Good to hear from you, Magda. what do I have on my mind? I wanted to offer, as long as we're on this topic of talking about the pain of the spiritual awakening and not being able to have the tools to go through this pain-free, is Bill Wilson as well went through a lot of pain. He had a bright light spiritual experience, which enabled him to maintain sobriety or get sober, and he worked the rest of the tenets of the Oxford group that did not make him immune to working those tenets, and then he developed and then was a part of writing the book Alcoholics Anonymous and being a co-founder of this movement. He still suffered, and he talks quite a bit about his depression, and he finally, I think about 22 years of sobriety, he got to a place of, hey, I can work the steps on my depression as well. And so he started to do that and relieve himself of his depression. So there are modern day sages as well that have suffered. And that puts a really good light on to people that I've put on the pedestal, like Gary Hicks, who died of cancer, who I was in extreme judgment of this summer, and as well as the passing of Ron Roth, who is one of my other spiritual gurus that I have sought through. I thought, both of their suffering, I judged harshly, but now I understand why.
Well, my take, two things. One would be, there is no pain or suffering in the spiritual experience or spiritual awakening. That's a misnomer. The spiritual awakening or the spiritual experience takes us to a level of vitality where we can't hide the suffering anymore. But it's not caused by or any inherent part of the suffering experience. Now, the non-being world has a rule that says no pain, no gain. My rule is no pain, no pain. Mm-hmm. And if there's pain there, then you're going to get to deal with it. And by being vitalized through the spiritual experience, you're going to have the vitality then to bring out of hiding that which you've been hiding from yourself. And my experience of working with any kind of addiction is that the addictive substances in the work that I've developed in the 12-step, in the codependence to interdependence workshop, we define addiction as the compulsive use of any person, place, substance, or activity to, one, not listen to or follow our higher guidance or the spiritual experience. That's one use for addictive substances. And the other one is to anesthetize pain. So the spiritual experience gives the vitality to start to access and dig out the garbage that never belonged. And, of course, as with the mystics we were talking about, if one doesn't know how and doesn't have the tools, if you don't have a shovel, it's going to be pretty tough to dig a deep well. And so if you've got a power drill on a crane, you're going to dig a well pretty quickly. And the tools that, by and large, have been available have been pretty much, well, you know, we don't really know what's going on here, but here, tell you what, why don't you just go ahead and suffer and give it to God? God is love, and God will really enjoy your suffering. It's like, come on, give me an intermission here. That's insane. But it was the best explanation they had. First century Aramaic forgiveness, what Yeshua came to offer people was a huge drilling rig to dig that well, to drop down into the dissociated parts of the mind, bring them forward in the presence of love and process through them. You don't have to hang around in suffering for longer than you're unwilling to do your work. And the work is, and the suffering is caused by the content of carbon-based memory, not by God. People have made up a story that it's all God's fault, you know, God's going to punish you, and that's all just pure garbage made up by people who didn't know any better, who were ignorant and did not understand. And so as we undo ignorance and come to understand, oh, I have a tool. I can do something with this. And that's the whole idea of the process.
Understood, and thank you for clarifying and tweaking that for me.
Cool.
Cool. I will. How about I recap what we talked about last
Let's
week
go for
real
it.
Quick,
yeah,
and we will continue
sure, go
on.
For it.
And
okay.
I think wanted to add that.
Just...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. We've got a little bit of overlap here, so go ahead. I'll be silent here.
I think doing the responsibility communication at this point is excellent, because the next thing I was going to talk about is the amends process, which looks similar, believe it or not, to the responsibility communication. But I'll recap first, and we will move forward. What we talked about last week are the steps. We got up to step 7 on Friday. With a little side note about what sarcasm really is, and thank you for that piece as well. But anyway, step 1, it basically is I can't think, or I can't drink and I can't think. It's a two-part step. And step 2 is about doing something different. Step 3 is a decision to finish the rest of the steps. Step 4 is writing down on piece of paper what our thinking looks like, looking at how we put ourselves in a position to be hurt. We address our resentments, fear, sex, conduct, and harms to others in the 4th step. And step 5, we admit the exact nature of our wrongs to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. And we talk about our thinking errors. And step 6, we become willing to get rid of those thinking errors, which are called character defects in step 6. And we ask ourselves this very simple question: are we ready to let go of everything that we see that is objectionable? Those are the things that we looked at in step 4 and talked about in step 5. And in step 7, we give those things up to God. It says we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. Character defects and shortcomings are similar. They're errors in thought. If our aim is to be loving, and we are short on love, that is a shortcoming. If our aim is to be tolerant and we are intolerant, that is a shortcoming, because we're short on tolerance, or we're short on patience, or we're short on love. I wanted to also share our 7-step prayer that is in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a suggested prayer. It's a very, and it's not prayer by the definition of to capture God. It is more of a request of God, and it goes like this. Our Creator, Our Creator, take me both good and bad. take away from me every single defect of character that blocked me off from you and my fellows. Oh. And the rest of it is grant me strength to do your bidding. And just a very simple, simple prayer, very powerful prayer. On some days, I don't know what character defects are blocking me off from God. And some days, a character defect can be a character asset. It just depends on how I use it. And so that prayer, I believe, is very perfect because it's asking God to take me both good and bad and to take away everything that blocks me off. So I wanted to offer that. And with that offering, did you have any comments at all before we move on to
right
tonight?
Right on track. Right on track, and it ties right in with the step of, 5B, where I ask Rukka for support in opening the space to come back into conscious relationship with all dissociated content and clean it out. Just exactly on track.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for that. What I said on Friday is that there's two coupling steps. There's 6 and 7. 6 is we become willing. 7 is we do. 8 and 9 are similarly matched up with that. With 8, we become willing, and 9, we do. And I love it when you talk about willingness being the cosmic grief. And also when you mentioned that in your book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, I very much appreciated that discussion about willingness as well. So I wanted to add that. In step 8, what we do is we make a list of all people we have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. That list of people that we have harmed comes out of our 4th step. Most likely all the people that I listed that I had resentments against, all the objects of fear, and also people that were on my sex conduct list and harms done to other list will end up on my 8th step list. It's an ongoing list. Sometimes I take people off the list after I make amends. Sometimes I add people to the list as I continue to act out of selfishness, self-centered fear, or non-being mind, as you say. And so becoming willing to make amends to them all for me is to constantly pray for that willingness. And I have willingness to make amends to every person on my list except for one. And that person would be my stepfather. And in preparation for thinking about what I'm going to say about the step, I started to do worksheets on him. And because I'm getting to deeper and deeper realization that my resentment against him is harming me because I'm living with the chemistry in my own body. So that is a process in the making there. So any comments before I go to step 9?
Oh, just nice catch on that one, to recognize that the original of it, it's in my own form, and that resentment is something I need to forgive, remove from myself. It's the key to the whole process. Does that mean that I have to approve of everything that anybody or everybody's ever done? No, not in the least. But it does mean that I am willing to remove literally my capacity for resentment, for anger, for hatred, for fear, so that I can stand in the space of love, maintain my human life no matter what anybody else is doing. And then, of course, carry on with the work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Step 9 is made direct amends to such people, except when wherever possible would harm them or others. And this would be the case. One of the perfect examples would be to make amends to somebody that you cheated on, because that would harm them. And it would also harm the person that you cheated on them with. And it talks extensively. For instance, I had a really good friend that cheated on his wife and his brother by sleeping with his brother's wife. He's not going to go to his brother and say, hey, I slept with your wife, you know, but I'm really sorry for doing that. And also that would have not only harmed his brother, it would have harmed his brother's wife as well. So that's one example. It talks extensively about making amends in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about timing. And it also says wherever possible. And the wording there opposed to whenever possible, saying wherever possible invites God into the process. It's about prudent timing. It's about inviting God into the process, not making amends out of ego or self-centered fear. And that's what I've done my whole life. I'm sorry. I'd like to apologize for doing this, but my behavior hasn't changed. And I believe that's why 8 and 9 are where 8 and 9 are, that we need to change before we start to pursue the process of amends, because I've apologized because I've had other things on my agenda to get something else out of somebody instead of being genuinely apologetic or wanting to make amends. And I also wanted to capitalize on the word amend instead of apology or saying I'm sorry. The word amend means to change the relationship. As an amendment to the Constitution changes the Constitution, or making amend in a piece of clothing changes the clothing or strengthens the clothing. Making an amend in a relationship changes the relationship, and hopefully 99% of the time makes that relationship stronger. So I believe that there is a process between steps 1 through 8 that makes step 9 possible, and definitely with the invite of God into that process and using one's intuition in order to make those amends. So any comments before I go into the wording that I've learned in the amends process?
No, go for it, please.
Okay. What I was taught, and most recently, once again, this is a skill set, kind of like step 5 is a skill set, to listen to somebody else's 4th step and 5th step. Making amends is a process, and there were specific words that my current sponsor gave me. I did a sponsorship change 5 years ago and went back through the steps with her, and she very much capitalized on the words, and which was a huge gift for me, because I'm one of those people that needs to be given the words and to make those words my own. And the main words to focus on is when I make amends to people is the admittance of wrong. I was wrong. I regret is the other word. Instead of being I'm sorry or I apologize, expressing regret. Instead of having guilt, shame, and remorse, there's a difference between guilt, shame, and remorse and regret. I regret that I behaved this way, or I regret the harm that I imposed upon you. And the next important idea to convey is, how can I make this right? The willingness to get right is very important. Letting go of the self-justification and the reasons why I did it and what they did in the mix, and taking total and complete responsibility for what I did. So, and staying on my side of the street, so to speak. And that, at that point in time, how can I make this right, is an invitation for me to listen to everything that they have to say, to express their side of it, and also to be given the opportunity to make that right. And then from there, negotiate on the best course of action to be taken to make it right.
My input there is that oftentimes I think this is a place where people try to figure it out. And I consider that to be the number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind, if I could just figure out. And I think that a really powerful place to go in this step that, you know, that this work can deliver to that step is to really, truly be in the space of the love exchange, where love is fully conscious, active, and present in one or both or whatever number of people are involved in it, and that active presence of love can make things right that in a million years a hurt mind could never figure out or never come up with. The energetic dynamic of the miracle happens in that space when love is conscious, active, and present, rather than it being, you know, a negotiation. It's just, to me, the effort to bring, this is the space to, it kind of ties in with step four of the worksheet of I choose to tap into my newborn state, that active presence of love and function is that. And when I am, you know, preferably the person I perhaps have a conflict with can bring that forward, it just opens doors that can't be fathomed by the intellect.
Understood. A lot of people think it's just about an apology, and I wanted to offer what I have learned with this step. The other thing that I wanted to offer, too, is when going through the worksheet in Florida, and I was like, where's the immense process in this? And Joel turned around and said, the immense process is when we offer a goal to them in the seventh step. And absolutely right. And then when you did the responsibility communication process, and Sarah did it with, and I can't remember the name of the other girl that she did it with, and we went through that sheet, I saw the amends process throughout that sheet as well. And most definitely I have used that to add to the amends process when I've been in a position to be able to, or I should say the honor and ability to opportunity to make amends to somebody else. That has definitely been something, it's been an added tool for sure.
I think that both step four in the seven-step worksheet, where I choose to tap in, where I bring forward that active presence of love, is a big part of the amends process. And to me, the word amends there means healing as well. That there's going to be a reorganization of my energy system, which will then source things in a higher way. And literally a reorganization of the energy system of the person that I'm interacting with. And when that reorganization occurs, oftentimes the thing that was the big deal, I mean, one of the most common comments that I get when people get to step 6C in the worksheet, and they're looking at, How do I see this situation I started out working with in step one now? And they're like, you know, I can't believe that my mind actually believed that that was such a big deal because it's silly now. But you watch somebody going into the front end of the forgiveness process or the front end of an amends process, and they're ready to tear somebody's eyes out over this issue. It's so emotionally charged for them, but they have no idea that they're ready to tear somebody's eyes out because of the emotion in themselves. And when they go through the forgiveness process and forgive, remove that emotion, all of a sudden they look back at that exact same thing. It's like, well, it was so silly to be upset about that. That's the healing process that to me is so powerful when I cancel my goal and I invite Rooka in to rearrange the energy system. That's where the real power and the healing occurs. So I see both of those, that step four in the worksheet of bringing love present, and then step seven where I create a loving goal that I'm willing to offer to them. are both to be part of the amends process, and in between is the healing process that opens a space for both people.
Agreed. Well okay. said.
Cool.
Yep, yep.
All right. So, well, anything else on step 9?
I believe I'm complete on step 9, and I think that is,
cool.
it just goes along perfect with the responsibility communication that was brought forward yesterday, and I look forward to being able to hear what happens tomorrow on the show with the examples. I think that you're going to have people call in for that. So we could continue the rest of the steps real quick. And
yeah, let's go for it.
Step 10 is we continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admitted it. As you'd mentioned earlier, how long did it take you to go through the steps initially? Well, 2 years. Am I still making mistakes? Am I done? No, I'm not done. And I really appreciate this step and the fact that Bill Wilson had the intuition to include this step along with the 6 tenets to close the gaps for us alcoholics and for others as well, because continue to make mistakes. And I need to look at those mistakes. And one of the things that I learned from the Aramaic forgiveness process, and one of the things that enables me to do a spot check inventory, is if I'm doing anything or reacting to anything that is less than love, then it's on me. And that enables me to get back into being the space of love and to make corrections as quickly as possible. And there are directions in the big book about how to do step 10, and it's basically 4 through 9 every single day. There are 2 schools of thought about that, and some people think that it's 4 through 9 every single day. Some people also think it's 1 through 9 every single day. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter. Just do it. You know, it is what my thoughts are. And but I have a tendency to lean towards the 1 through 9 every single day thought process. And the reason why I say that is because of the writings in the 12 and 12, which is a book that was solely written by Bill Wilson 15 years after he got sober, and its intent was to introduce the 12th tradition. He added essays about the steps to offer his experience 15 years later to the big book, and he talks about extensively restrain of pen and tongue, you know, delay taking action before you get to that inventory process. And for me, you know, I need to take a step back before I react and realize that I am powerless over whatever is going on, that my life is unmanageable because my thinking is in error, and that I need to do something different in step 2, and I need to make a decision to go through with the rest of the steps and then to inventory that and talk about it to somebody else. If I did do something wrong, when I figure out what the exact nature of my wrongs was, when I do that spot check inventory or write something down on paper, and then to give those character defects up, well, and then to write whatever wrong that I did. So that is what step 10 is about. And then the 5th instruction that they give in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is about resolutely helping others. Is after we have harmed somebody and have made amends, that we go out and help somebody else, help another alcoholic start thinking about other people. So that is step 10.
Right. Right, that's powerful. And, you know, the invitation is always there to share the tools with others, so that fits well with what we've developed in the Wise as That Means Me Again work. And for me, as I look at the 10th step, I think that the wake-up sheet, the reality management wake-up sheet, is the perfect tool for the 10th step, ongoing personal inventory and resolution of issues. So if somebody, you know, when we get people started on the wake-up sheet, we usually suggest they do five a day for the first 40 days. And we've had people carry that tradition on in their lives for decades that they do. It's just part of their lives. Just like they wash their face every day, they wash their minds every day. And they go through the process of forgiveness, you know, five times a day, every day. And that's really going through the whole process and taking the inventory and then cleaning out whatever you find there. And as one undoes block to truth, new issues, new perspectives show up. And I notice there's a lot of focus on the word wrong there, and I like to help people to shift that focus a little bit to recognize that, you know, the position that I'm in right now and what I did that seemed so wrong might actually be the thing that delivers me to healing. And so maybe it wasn't wrong, but it wasn't the highest and best choice at the moment. And to put it in the category of, well, for my true spiritual journey, living as an alive, awake, aware human being, perhaps this was a necessary step. There were certainly higher ways I could have done it. So maybe it was not right, but when I give it a categorical wrong, I can tend to lock myself into that pattern. And to me, the whole idea is to unlock myself from the patterns that don't support the expression of my true human life of aliveness, of joy, of creativity, and of love in my life, compassion. So the letting go a little bit of the positive wrongs and, okay, so that wasn't the highest and best choice. So now I'm going to make a new choice. I'm going to clean that one up. I think opens a different quality of energetic space.
Agreed.
Cool. So we're at step 11 then. We've got two
we're
more steps.
We're at step 11.
10 minutes. Yay.
Okay. 5 minutes apiece. Step 11 is we continue through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Bill Wilson gives three suggestions, I believe, in step 11 in when he wrote the big book, and that was to have contact with God at night in reviewing our day, and also have contact with God in the morning in order to ask for guidance for our day, and also in times of irritation or in question to stop, take a pause, and connect. One of the prayers that he suggests, Bill Wilson knew that he was not a spiritual giant, and knew that he was walking on pretty thin ice with suggestions of spiritual direction to go in. And so he kept things very vague here, and I'm grateful that he did, to allow others to grow in the direction that they see fit after they get to step 11. And definitely I'm grateful that step 11 is where step 11 is, because we need to make all these changes and 1 through 10 to clear the path, in order to connect to God better. I describe it when I talk to people that I sponsor, is that we start out with maybe a black and white antenna TV connection going on. Like I remember only getting three channels in the 70s, trying to watch Gilligan's Island, and going to, after working the steps and continuing to work the steps, especially the inventory, we able to get to, you know, Blu-ray, Dolby surround sound when it comes to having a connection with God. And we're able to allow God to direct our mind instead of self-centered fear directing our mind. Go ahead.
I think a really important step in or piece to understand in that place is the first century Aramaic definition of the word prayer, and that is to set a trap for God, to be the space where love shows up. And I think that is so on target. You start the morning and you breathe and you step into that connected space of love. Before you go to sleep at night, the last thing you do is appreciation and step into that active space of love. And then it becomes a habit. And I can remember as a kid being told, there will come a time when your whole life will become a prayer. And, you know, at that time in my world, prayer was you're down on your hands and knees. And it's like the only thing I could imagine out of that was square knees. Where now I understand that what Yeshua was talking about is prayer, and if you listen to the Lord's Prayer, it's not a prayer. What people call the Lord's Prayer is not a prayer. It's an instruction on how to become the space where active love shows up in the world. So to get to the point where we're in constant contact with that active presence of love, to me, is the focus of the whole body of work in this step to live there 24/7, 365, ultimately, and you know that it just becomes the energetic space that we're plugged into continuously, and then to recognize the only thing that will unplug us from that space is our own hostility or fear. And so, if somebody comes along that activates our hostility and fear, oops, there's my next piece of work. Oh, thank you, friend, or what yesterday I might have called enemy, for showing me that. I didn't know I had that in me. There's my next piece of work. There's the thing that inhibits me functioning as the space of love. And it just opens a whole different doorway.
Agreed. Agreed, and thank you. One of the prayers, putting that in air quotes, that he suggests is the one by St. Francis of Assisi.
Yes.
Where I sow hatred, help me to sow love. And I can't quote the rest of it right now, but...
where there's injury, pardon.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know,
so that is one of the suggested prayers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an awesome, powerful prayer. It's powerfully spoken by St. Teresa Mother Teresa in that movie that I was talking about earlier, The Letters. She speaks it, and it's quite powerful in her process and in her life. And to recognize that the whole process becomes that of doing our work, and it's a continuous, ongoing opening to deeper and deeper experiences of literally the presence of love in every cell of our structure, so we're plugged into that continuously. And, of course, once you do that, the 12 steps kind of naturally, you're going to extend that to others.
Absolutely. A little side note, people consider pursuing their separate spiritual path to be their 11th step. I consider becoming one of the first things that I did after I got to step 11 was to become a Reiki master teacher. That was a part of my 11th step process. And believe it or not, that 11th step, that brought me to you. The gentleman that introduced me to Reiki, actually I was doing a home daycare and I had three moms that were second level Reiki practitioners. So I thought that was a hint that maybe this was something to pursue. So the gentleman that attuned me to Reiki 1 and Reiki 2 introduced me to Celebrating Life Ministries, which was an organization that was started by Ron Roth, who was a born healer. And from listening to Celebrating Life Ministries on a teleconference, I was introduced to Dale Allen Hoffman. And from Dale Allen Hoffman, I was introduced to you. So I consider being a part of Celebrating Life Ministries, being a part of knowing Dale Allen Hoffman and being taught to do toning and Aramaic and being introduced to what the real words are. And the real meanings and the possibilities of who Mary Magdalene was, is, and Yeshua, learning his true name and then being led to you and studying under you, I consider all that to be a part of my 11th step.
Right. Cool. And then the next step, and we're down to just the last minute or so, of course, is to invite others into the process, right?
Yes. There's three parts to the 12 steps, and that is to have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps is one of it. I feel like I have a spiritual awakening every day. The second part is to carry the message to others and to practice these principles in all of our affairs, to carry the message to others. And the AA terminology is to share experience, strength, and hope, to teach people how to work the steps, to be a tour guide through the AA literature and to introduce them to God. That is the message. And to practice these principles in all of our affairs is to work the steps in every area of our life.
Awesome.
I think I did that under 30 or 60 seconds.
You did. You did. And so we are down to just the last few seconds. And much, much appreciation.
I'm grateful for this opportunity.
Yeah, we're going to do a bit of a poll and decide what day of the week we're going to turn into.
Okay. That was actually going to be that we did Recovery Wednesday. And so that's out on their website. You can pick that up and follow through the different lessons that we did. And so we welcome you to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, December the 29th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And once again, the Course in Miracles lesson has been the same one every day this week, and it is, this holy instant would I give to you, be you in charge, for I would follow you, certain that your direction gives me peace. And the part that I looked up today, it says, the holy instant can also be understood as a process that repeats constantly throughout our lives. The entire spiritual journey or atonement process is one of acknowledging and receiving the power of the holy instant. Put simply, in every moment of every day, you have the power to choose love or to choose fear. You have the power to surrender to joy or to continue to struggle. So live in that holy instant. And welcome, Michael.
Yay. So welcome, everybody, and thank you, dear heart. We are honored and delighted that we get to move forward and continue in this conversation. And are delighted that you've chosen to join us. Getting close to the end of what our culture fantasizes as a year, something we've a great fantasy we've created, nothing factual about it, but it's one that works. And it can be a good idea every once in a while to really recognize when we're engaging in a fantasy. And there are fantasies like, we call this date, this time, and we have this country and that country and that country, all fantasies made up by the mind, but they're things that kind of work. And then we live in fantasies that are not really very productive, and they're the situations where forgiveness becomes worthwhile, because every fantasy that we hold, that is, we hold a perceptual construct generated that is not accurate about the actual events of our lives, we create an energy within our tissue structure that ends up resulting in what we call dis-ease. You know, a good analogy is imagine that you've got a newspaper, and everything that the newspaper writes that is published in the newspaper has an impact on the functioning of their computers. Write things based in fear and sadness and grief and anger and rage and pain and drama and trauma, and all that energy destroys the hard drive of the computer of the newspaper office. Those things that are written in joy and aliveness and creativity and wonderment and the presence of love upgrades the computer. How long would the average computer last in the average newspaper office? Not very long. And, the fact is we have an energy system, and, from my education, if I go back to my early education in the world of electronics and physics, they tell us that energy is the only thing that exists, and that energy is eternal, can neither be created nor destroyed. Kind of a similar creation story to what the theologians have told us. Different words for the main characters, but same principle. And if in fact only energy exists, and if in fact energy is eternal, then we must be energy, we must be eternal. Why do we expect to die? Why do we have a thing, a fantasy called death? And it's time for us to put it away. Well, unlike the newspaper office where what's written in the computer doesn't impact the quality of or the function of the computer, that's not true about our human physiology. Everything we engage in, it's interesting if you go to the opening words in the book of John where we're told it says, in the beginning was the Word and the Word became flesh. In fact, it doesn't say that. It says, in the beginning was the mind energy and the mind energy became flesh. And the mind energy that you engage in has a quality, and that quality either supports and builds up the functioning of your energy system, quote-unquote your hard drive, your multi-generational body-mind unit, or it has a quality of disintegration, which creates the tearing down of that multi-generational database called a body-mind unit. And it's up to us to choose to put away that which is based in hostility or fear. And when we confront a situation that resonates hostility or fear in us, to own that hostility or fear and to understand that there is a technology, there is a tool for removing hostility and fear from human physiology. There's a tool for removing those energetic patterns from our structures, whether it's in our genes or whether it's just in our mental awareness, our minds, which function through every cell in the so-called body. When we refuse, when we give up functioning out of those energetic patterns that are of a disintegrative nature, those energetic patterns based in hostility or fear, then we are restored to the truth of who we are. And being restored to the truth of who we are, this energy system begins to function as it's designed. Well, it's never changed. It's always functioned the way it's designed to function. It's designed to warn us when we engage in disintegrative mind energy with some form of pain or trauma that we're off base. You know, it's kind of like the alarm system. Unfortunately, most people, when the internal alarm of pain goes off, point their finger at somebody down the road and say, you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me. And that would be kind of like, you know, the fire alarm canceled, the sock goes off in your house and you call the fire trucks and send them to the guy down the block. It's not going to do much good. If hostility or fear is moving within you, then there's an energetic pattern which is time to be forgiven. And recognizing that the word forgive has nothing to do with what 99.9% of the world talks about. I'm going to let you off the hook for what's moving inside of me. But rather that forgiveness is the tool with which you address, access, and remove those energetic patterns based in hostility or fear. In a family system, there is no hostility or fear within a household unless there are people in the household that bring hostility or fear into the household. There's no, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid. There's just mad, sad, and afraid that are alarms that say, oh, I'm carrying an energy within me. And you'll notice that life is custom designed to show you what you're holding on to that is out of harmony, that is out of integrity with love. And when that alarm goes off, most people have a story. They go into resistance to ownership. It's interesting, in the Aramaic language, the word Satan is not the dude with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork of popular lore, of Greek lore, but rather Satan quite literally is defined as the resistor, one who misleads. And you'll notice the average person, when their hostility or fear is activated. If you invite them to be responsible for their hostility or fear, they'll go into resistance. And the resistance will go something like, no, 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 that's not mine. That's got nothing. It's not my fault I'm doing that. So there's the resistance. And then the second half of the definition of Satan in Aramaic, they're misled. And then they'll start to tell you, they'll start to describe the perceptual construct that their mind is generating out of the dissociated hostility or fear that's been resonated in them. And sadly, most people live trapped in Satan most of their lives. Our objective with this work is to share a set of tools with which to remove all fear, hostility, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma. And you'll notice that those things never come up in you, or unless you're just a generally miserable person, they never come up in you unless there's someone who is not fulfilling a goal that you hold for them. Now, you could just as easily, when someone's not fulfilling a goal that you hold for them, respond from a connected space of love and aliveness rather than from a disconnected space of hostility and fear. So the objective in the long haul of this work is to make available a set of tools with which each person progressively literally removes the very capacity for any form of hostility or fear, and simply speaks from a mind connected to active present love. Imagine the day that 7.5 billion people wake up realizing, number one, who they are, that they are literally beings created of love, recognize what each other person is, literally a being made of love, perhaps locked into some form of hostility or fear, but lacking that hostility or fear within oneself, there's no capacity to even generate that in interaction with others. But when interacting with another who's not fulfilling a goal, and this is where the core understanding of forgiveness lies, is that when I load a goal in my mind, that goal recruits into activity the data that is going to become my perceptual construct. If I load a goal that causes my mind to utilize some form of hostility or fear, then my perceptual construct will be constructed from that hostility or fear. And seeing as how it will be a picture of the person I hold the goal for, I'll think that they're the reason why I'm in pain or trauma. I'm only in pain or trauma ever. I mean, nobody's ever been angry with another person. Nobody's ever been afraid of another person. None of that is true. That's all a lie. If someone's angry with another person, they're angry because there's anger in them. If someone's sad about an event that happens, they're sad about the event that happens because there's sadness in them. If someone has fear and they say, oh, I'm so afraid of that, they just lied to themselves. They're in fear because there's fear in them. What if the project became for each of us to confront and remove all hostility and fear, and to live in relationship as love with love, even when somebody isn't fulfilling our goals? Well, but Michael, if I couldn't rage at them, how would I get them to do what I want them to do? Well, maybe it's not your business to get them to do what you want them to do. Maybe it's your business to live as the presence of active love. And it's time to take your nose out of other people's business and recognize that what's going on inside of you is about you. If you're feeling it, there's a reason you're feeling it. It's because it's yours. You know, we've got that test we've talked about so many times over the years. How do you tell whether or not something you're feeling is yours or not? You're feeling it. That's all you need to know. Now, you can tell yourself a lie that you're feeling because somebody else did something, but that's never true. You're feeling it because you had a goal for someone to do something different than what they did, And that goal recruited that hostility or fear, whatever variable it was on those themes, into activity and used that to as part of the energetic pattern for building your perception. The beauty of the first century Aramaic forgiveness process is that at the core of it, you know, the word that's been translated as forgive is shebag, which literally means to cancel. And when you realize that your pain, your fear, your sadness, your grief, your rage, your hatred, your vengeance, your whatever it is recruited into activity from the content of your own mind by the goals that you hold, and you recognize the word forgive, which is shebag or shabak in Aramaic, means to cancel. When you cancel that goal, the perceptual construct based in what that goal has recruited collapses in on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, that gives you access to the underlying energetic pattern. And when, in the presence of active love, those underlying patterns come forward for exposure to love, they literally are transmuted, they're dissolved, they're healed. Such a brilliant understanding of the mind comes out of that first century Aramaic language in the words of the man named Yeshua. If you're not using the forgiveness process yet, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. You can access the worksheet there. You can print it off on your own printer from the website. It's free. Actually, there are several different versions of the worksheet there for you to test out. Different people find the variety of worksheets to be effective for them to rotate from one worksheet to another. Slight variations on the theme. You can do the worksheet live right there on the website. And or you can go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. When you do that, you'll be looking at the world's first and only forgiveness app. You can engage in the forgiveness process right there on your phone, the worksheet. Actually, two different versions that Jeannie's put into the app. There's one for educating children on forgiveness. It's called the Dragon Klingon Game. There are copies of The Commitment from Healing Through Relationships for children, for adults, first person, second person, Business Commitment. It's all in the app. There's a place in the app that if you have a question, you can ask. Instantly, right there, just click a button, ask your question, click send, and Jeannie will receive that and will address your question on the air, and then we'll feed back to you the data for the show where we answer the question. You can access all of our worksheets, many videos, meditation CD, wellness to stillness, all those things are available in the app. And so you can download that free. It's a totally private app. We specifically designed it so that there are as few permissions required as possible. In fact, to use the app, it only asks one thing, and that is to be able to use the internet. And we specifically designed it that way so that, you know, there people do a lot of work with very, very private issues. And so you can rest assured that it is private. The only one who has access to it is you. When you complete doing a worksheet, if you choose to, you can print it. And, of course, to print it, you know, you have to save it somewhere. It's going to ask permission to save to your drive. But otherwise, we don't ask for any permissions. So you can be assured that the app is very private. So just type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness in your app store, download the app, and go to work with forgiveness. And then, of course, here we are 5 days a week. And this conversation has been going on for 10 years plus. Actually, I guess we're just heading into the 11th year now. So it's kind of like been a 10-year workshop on forgiveness. And so if we can support you in any way, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, the calling number is 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you have a question, you push 1. That will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will introduce you by your area code, and we will be having a conversation. And we would love to support you in putting these tools to work. That's our objective in doing this show. And I'm going to turn to the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We've taken a year to read through it. I've been just delighted to have the opportunity to go back and review the book, which I wrote over a quarter of a century ago. And our character, Richard, has been doing a worksheet, this last chapter, chapter 24, which is entitled Work It Out With Your Best Friend. And that comes from the idea we actually had a client back several years ago who had a child, and they fed back to us that the worksheet, their child had said that the worksheet was their best friend. And so that's how this chapter became named. And Richard, the character in the book, has been stepping up to the plate and processing, doing a lot of questioning and rebuilding of his understanding of life. He's moving through a situation where he had gotten lost in resentment with his sister, which had diffused into his relationships with women, and he's realizing how that's impacted his life. Richard's asked the question, well, what can I do? How can I support this work? And our offering has been, pass it on. Give it to someone else. And so passing on the work is number one request we have of people. And I offer to Richard the thought, we're on page the bottom of 179 if you're following in the book. I believe a precious opportunity was missed 2,000 years ago to heal a suffering, wounded humanity. It was our choice to regain our sanity, our dignity, and to function again as human beings. Recall that honoring truth is the healer of blockage of truth. If you're reading along with me, by the way, I've changed the wording there because we've had an upgrade in understanding of that word love. Back when I was writing the book, I used the word love as most of the culture does. Oh, well, it represents, you know, something we do to each other. Something about, you know, positive regard for another or what have you. And then realizing that that word has been misused, love is not something we do to each other. Nobody's ever loved you. Nobody's ever going to love you. You've never loved anybody. That's all a falsity. Love is a state of being. It describes who we are. If we think it's something we can do, then we lose awareness. We block awareness of who we are. And so in that particular sentence, I've shifted the wording to, it is honoring truth, and that heals blockage of truth. And I offer to Richard the thought, I trust its transforming power. I believe that each mind wants to and will shift to the most rewarding way of living possible once the possible is seen. The question is, who will break through to the critical mass? Who will make the possible available to humanity? The following story by an unknown author says it all. Will you make the difference? Tell me the weight of a snowflake, a hawk asked a wild dove. Nothing more than nothing was the answer. In that case, I must tell you a marvelous story, said the hawk. I sat on the branch of a fir close to its trunk. It began to snow. Not heavily, not a raging blizzard, no, just like in a dream without any violence. Since I had nothing better to do, I counted the snowflakes sizzling on the twigs and needles of my branch. The number was exactly 3,741,952 when the next snowflake dropped onto the branch. Nothing more than nothing, as you say. And the branch broke off. Having said that, the hawk flew away. The dove, since Noah's time, an authority on peace, thought about the story for a while and finally said with resolve, "Perhaps only one person's voice is lacking for peace to come about in the world." Richard, the next time someone resonates a reality less than love in your mind, will you be a voice for peace? And we'll save the epilogue for tomorrow. And Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought or a question for us?
It's all quiet. So if someone presses one, we have 34 minutes. We have plenty of time for a discussion. Coming up for you here at the end of the year, we've got two more days after today. And this 2021, we'll move into 2022. Is there something we can do to support you?
What's on your mind if you're out there in listener land? The time for the dialogue is, or the monologue, pardon me, is completed. Time for dialogue. What's on your mind? How can we support you? Any experiences you've had throughout the year working with these tools that might inspire someone if you share it with us? Push one. Let's have a conversation about it. Any questions about the step-by-step forgiveness process, about why any particular step is done, why it's presented the way it's presented, or any of the other tools? We've got many different worksheets on the website. They're all there, free and available, from communication tools to the commitment, healing through relationships, wide variety of tools. And if we can be of any support, I would love to hear someone's voice and have an interactive dialogue. How has your experience of using the tools throughout this year been? Anything to share with us?
With no hands up, share some of the expressions that we had with Aria over the past 2 days. Michael and I are well enough that we have started keeping Aria again. Monday was our first full day with her, and then we had her yesterday, and she's just been amazing.
Oh, just, yeah, it's like, you know, we've been apart from her for 2 weeks with having gone through COVID. And it is, we're so thankful for feeling good waking up in the morning and having had the tweak that COVID gave us. It was actually a gift that we can both see as we've gone through it. Not one we'd probably choose again in any time soon, but just several things that it's like Aria's gone to a quantum leap. You know, if you're not familiar with her granddaughter, she's been circling the earth now for three years and... Well, since August, so what, 5 months, 6 months?
4 months.
4 months. And she's just, yesterday, it was in the 60s here, we went out to feed the worms in our worm bin. She likes to play with the worms. And the grass was wet, so she only had her socks on. And so I think I want to take my socks off. So I took her socks off. We both went out barefoot and came back in. I left her socks sitting on the front deck, and I said, "Well, here, I'll give you a little foot rub, so we'll dry your feet, and then we'll put your socks on." Okay. And she thanks me for the foot rub. "Oh, that feels good, Papa." And then as we walk in the house, she said, "Come on over here, and you sit down, Papa. I'm going to give you a foot rub." So here she's at three, giving me actually quite a proficient foot rub. You know, it's something we've been doing with her since she was an infant, and it was the first time that she just, you know, like, "Oh, well, I want to give you a foot rub now." It's just awesome. And one of the books that she got, we've shared with you before that she's right from the first time we started to talk about anatomy with her back several months ago, she or at least we thought she'd swallowed a button, and we ended up talking to her about, you know, the button goes down your throat and it's your esophagus and excuse me, somebody just dialed into my phone. And after we did that, one of the things she'd gotten for Christmas, I'd start to say, was a book on anatomy. And we had, when she swallowed this button, talked to her about where the button would go. And then we were watching her bowel movements for the button to come back up. And so she became very interested in the body. We had a set of anatomy cards, and I dug them out, and we showed her the, you know, the esophagus and the stomach and all of that. And so she got a book laying all of that out. And yesterday, as Jeannie, you know, we're kind of homeschooling her, and so she has Play-Doh, and she made she and Jeannie be of the body, you know, the head, the eyes, the neck, the throat, the body, the lungs, so. She went through and talked about, she got a piece of apple and put it in the Play-Doh character's mouth, and then the apple, and she explained at three that it goes down the esophagus and goes into the stomach and then goes into the intestines, and the large intestine and the small intestine, and she likes to say, and then comes out the pooper. So she did that, and then Jeannie, you know, if you jump on her Facebook page, she put a video on it, and she made the lungs out of Play-Doh. And Jeannie said, well, what about they? What are they? And totally silent. She doesn't say a word. But she reaches for her Play-Doh and picks out, just gets little pieces of red Play-Doh and puts them in the lungs. One of the things she enjoys doing is watching anatomy lessons of a cartoon character named Dr. Binox that talks about the body. And one of the videos that she loves to watch is the one about the heart and the lungs. And it shows how the blood is turned blue and once the body's used it, it's withdrawn the oxygen from the red blood cells, and how those red blood cells then go into the lungs and pick up oxygen. So instead of answering that was the lungs, it was just like her answer was a nonverbal one. She took little tiny pieces of red Play-Doh and put them in the lungs for the red blood cells. Just to watch how this little mind is developing and the presence of love that she is and she holds, and realizing how important it is for us to do our job as grandparents for her, of really truly acknowledging her as seeing her as love. And if something else comes up, to be the space of love for her, to demonstrate that space for her as she grows into, you know, the young woman that she will become. It's just so delightful and such a lesson for us. Just amazing.
And she wanted me to play with her, and my youngest brother had driven up from Knoxville to spend a little bit of time with my dad. So Michael said he would keep Aria there until they came and got her, and for me to go ahead and go be with my brother and my dad at the rehab center. And she was like, no, I want you to play. And Michael says, well, you probably, you know, it would be nice if you told Nene that it would be okay for her to go see her brother and her dad. And she looked at me and she goes, you go see your brother and your dad. I mean, she just shifted so quickly and easily.
Gave up the goal.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Pretty sweet. We're blessed.
So come on, somebody, ask a question.
And tell us
question one.
Your blessing is. What's your share? What's happening for you as we close out the year? And how can we support you? And perhaps if there's no conversation to be had, we're actually going to get in the car and go over to see Jeannie's dad at the rehab center. He's come out of a hospital. And unfortunately, and if everybody would, we'd appreciate you holding the space for him when he left here, because all three of us had COVID. We couldn't take him to the hospital. And there was a nurse here, and she suggested calling 911. And so they took him by ambulance, but he walked, you know, from his bed up the steps to the deck to get on the gurney to be taken to the hospital. And unfortunately now, he didn't get, it seems, the kind of attention that would really be warranted in terms of getting him up and moving around. And so he's unable to stand on his own now, unable to get up. And, of course, we're not equipped or trained to be able to handle him if he can't ambulate. So we're holding space that the rehab center should be able to get him back on his feet and back going. Where one of the things he loves to do is beat us at dominoes. That's kind of our morning routine, is to eat breakfast and play dominoes with him. Or oftentimes in the evening we'll do that. So we're going to take a set of dominoes over and hang out with him and play dominoes and see if we can get his mind stimulated and acclimated and ready to get his body moving in a little better way so that he'll be able to come home and carry on. So if you'd hold the space for us in that regard, that would be deeply, deeply appreciated. If you use energy to tap into someone to send that love, his name's James Morris. And so if you just hold that space, we'd be appreciative. And if there are no hands up, there is no dialogue, then I'm going to say that we appreciate you being here. We hold space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. And we'll look forward to being with you tomorrow. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.